Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for June 23rd, 2025. I'm Phil Adler. It may be logical to assume that, economically speaking, as Germany goes, so goes Europe. Confluence Associate Market Strategist Daniel Ortworth joins us today with a profile of Germany's new chancellor and what investors can expect from his leadership. Daniel, let me begin with something very basic. How does Germany's economy stand relative to economies of other major countries?
Hi, Phil. Good to talk to you again. In terms of gross domestic product, Germany's economy is the third largest in the world. There are the two giants, the United States with a GDP of $29 trillion and China with a GDP of $18 trillion. Then comes Germany at $4.6 trillion. Only a little earlier this decade, Japan had the third largest economy, but its economy has been struggling with low growth or even shrinkage for several years now and has slipped to fourth. Just to fill out the top five, India is next in size behind Japan, and it's worth mentioning because India is currently projected to pass Japan later this decade and take the fourth spot and close the gap with number three, Germany.
So, while Germany's economy lags the US and China by a lot, it's still significant. Now, Germany's new chancellor, I want to learn more about his background, Friedrich Merz. He spent years incubating in a traditional post-war conservative environment. What were the political hallmarks of this environment?
Phil, the dominant characteristic of this period was the Cold War standoff between the United States and the Soviet Union. Let's remember that for 45 years, Germany was split into two separate countries, one allied with the West, led by the US, and the other allied with the East and thoroughly controlled by the Soviet Union. This made Germany the focal point and front line of the Cold War. Like so many countries, Germany had two main political parties during those decades, one with conservative and the other with liberal policies. Chancellor Merz grew up in the conservative tradition, championed by the Christian Democratic Union, or CDU. In the CDU's view, the two essential pillars of a secure and prosperous Germany, West Germany at that time, were a healthy environment for German businesses and a strong relationship with the United States. The CDU also advocated social policies that were conservative, which has occasionally played a role in German politics, but it was those two foundational advocacies, prosperous German businesses to support the economy, and a strong relationship with the United States to assure security that form the core of Chancellor Merz's traditional political philosophy.
Now, Daniel, as you point out in this week's report, everything's changing now that the United States is modifying its policies toward Europe and as populism grows on the continent. And you make the point that Merz cannot use old remedies from the last century to deal with new problems, including a lagging economy. What are the current main challenges for Germany's economy?
It has been about 5 years since Germany's economy entered the current period of stagnation, right about the time of the global COVID response. Now, COVID response did not cause Germany's problems, but it seems to have brought them to the surface, and we highlight five problems in particular. First, energy costs have dramatically risen because of the loss of Russian natural gas in the wake of the Ukraine war, and Germany's own choice to accelerate the phase out of its nuclear power plants. Second, Chinese products have become much more competitive in Germany, while the Chinese consumer market has softened, reducing German exports to China. Third, during its prosperous period since the end of the Cold War and reunification in 1990, Germany prioritized a balanced budget or even a surplus over investments in critical infrastructure such as high-speed internet and other features of a high-tech industry. Now, the country lags behind global competitors in terms of public investment. Fourth, an aging population, lack of interest in technological fields among the youth, and rising barriers to immigration are choking the supply of qualified people for increasingly critical job skills. And finally, the country's increasingly Byzantine regulations and permitting policies are hampering businesses that are trying to expand or incorporate upgrades into their processes.
Well, let's focus on one of those problems you just mentioned. How is Merz attempting to deal with the problem of underinvestment?
To face this challenge, he is drawing on his pro-business roots by promoting a package of tax cuts, elimination of regulations, and stimulus spending that emphasizes infrastructure renewal and development. The new coalition government he heads is already moving quickly to implement a federal budget for 2025 and 2026 that will include major investments. A 500 billion euro special fund has been established to start the flow of these investments, and the government has vowed to pass the laws enabling its use by this summer. The coalition has also drafted a 62-point plan to stimulate the economy through the elimination of business-related taxes and regulations. These actions occur on the backdrop of legislation passed earlier this year to relax the laws governing the German government's ability to borrow. A 2009 balanced budget amendment to the Constitution, known as the debt brake, had placed restrictions on the government's total debt level and the size of the annual budget deficit. Among the changes, expenditures on defense, cybersecurity, intelligence, and civil protection exceeding 1% of German GDP can now be financed with new debt.
As you mentioned, Germany faces a shortage of skilled labor, but this runs up against another issue, which is rising sentiment against immigrants. This doesn't look like an easy problem to solve. How is Merz trying to address this?
Well, Phil, this is definitely requiring a balancing act from the new chancellor. On the one side, his coalition partner, the Social Democratic Party, or SDP, has a relatively pro-immigration stance. However, the right-wing Alternative for Germany party, AfD, which took second place in February's election, has a staunchly anti-immigration stance. Now, the AfD is certainly not a part of the governing coalition, but its rising popularity fairly represents the position of a significant portion of the population. In fact, the election results do a good job of representing how split the population's view on the subject is. Therefore, Merz will have to craft legislation that cuts the broad issue into smaller parts, fine-tuning the anti-immigration approach in order to strike the balance. Since the coalition he leads has a razor-thin majority in the Bundestag, Germany's parliament, he must tread carefully.
As he rose through politics, Merz was right to count on U.S. support for Germany's defense, but now as the U.S. backs away a bit, Germany must adjust. How is Merz responding to this?
Yet again, Phil, he is trying to strike a balance between competing priorities. The level of ongoing U.S. defense commitment to Europe through the North Atlantic Treaty Organization remains an open question. Although the current presidential administration has expressed concern about the appropriate future level of commitment, it has also stated that it has no immediate intentions to withdraw. Remember that the U.S. currently has about 35,000 military personnel stationed in Germany, and in some ways its commitment has actually increased in recent years, as shown by its increasing troop presence in next-door Poland. In response to this uncertainty, Merz has made strong statements about Germany's need to establish a defense capability that is adequate to the task and independent of U.S. assistance, and he has taken steps to increase funding for the German armed forces. At the same time, however, he is actively engaging the Trump administration to include a visit to the Oval Office to preserve as much of the traditional transatlantic alliance as he can.
Daniel, something was evident to me as I read in your report about Merz's background. This is a leader with a great deal of experience, not only in government, but also in the private sector, in law and finance during the time he was out of government. And he seems to be flexible as he navigates a new but still positive relationship with the United States. Are you confident in his leadership?
Phil, I think the best way to answer the question is to say that I definitely consider him extremely well qualified for the job. Ultimately, leadership skill can be determined and verified only by being tested in the position of leadership and in circumstances that demand its successful use. We shall see as events unfold. However, Merz possesses an arguably unrivaled combination of education, training, and diversity of experience across a range of historical periods and types of endeavor. His ability to navigate the extremely fractious German political environment of today, gain the top spot, and score some early legislative wins further justifies a measure of confidence. Personally, I was impressed by his Oval Office visit. In a setting that has often challenged the composer of many of its visitors, to include world leaders, Chancellor Merz handled the moment with aplomb.
And would you say his proposed solutions to the problems we mentioned seem promising?
They certainly mark a decisive change from German policy of the recent past. Recent German governments have gained characterizations such as fiscally hyper-conservative, even stingy, and evasive to any leadership role in Europe. The solutions of the Merz government, if nothing else, promise to be different from the past. If the coalition can hold together, remember, as I previously mentioned, this is a razor-thin majority coalition, and there is no guarantee that it will hold together, it will enact far-reaching measures that inject money into the German economy and a strong bid for German leadership on economic and defense issues into the broader European geopolitical and economic environment. Only time will tell what effects this will have. Again, remember that Germany has largely been confined to a restricted role in European affairs since World War II, but if Merz has his way, Germany will take an active role in European affairs as well as its own domestic affairs, as we have not seen for quite a while.
Well, let's get into what this all might mean for U.S. investors. Now, investors in European defense stocks have been enjoying the last few months. What are the chances that this will continue and even expand to impact European stock markets as a whole?
Phil, I can't speak to the valuations or prospects of any individual stock. What I can say is that these policies are designed to inject a significantly increased amount of spending into the German economy. While the most prominent spending will occur in the defense sector, it will spread across the German economy in areas ranging from infrastructure to energy to high tech, investments in data centers and information networks. Although Germany will prioritize its own companies for the work to be done, the country will not be able to affect this transformation and expansion on its own, so there will be plenty of opportunity for companies in neighboring countries. This is a rising tide of opportunity for European companies in the industrial sector primarily, but also in materials, energy, and information technology.
But it will require a lot more government borrowing. Germany will need to issue more bonds to finance the expanding debt needed for defense. What might be the impact of higher German government debt rates?
After a long period of fiscal discipline, Germany is now going to dramatically boost its borrowing. Therefore, the supply of German government bonds will substantially increase, which we naturally expect to drive down their prices. Since German bonds serve as a benchmark for European sovereign debt, and since this new supply will provide an alternative for fixed income investors who would otherwise buy the debt of other European governments, we expect the policies of the Merz government to drive down the prices of European long-term debt across the board.
And how might the U.S. government bond market be affected?
Phil, there is a possibility that this effect could cross the Atlantic and put downward pressure on treasuries. However, the unique status and role played by treasuries may insulate them. For decades, treasuries have served as the reserve asset for the global financial system, almost as a currency for certain types of financial transactions. In these characteristics, treasuries are unique. That means demand for treasuries rises and falls with more than just global investor appetite for low-risk assets. The sudden influx into the market of another low-risk assets such as German government bonds may or may not affect the treasury market.
Do you, Daniel, see an opportunity in currency markets in favor of the euro if the dollar weakens as many expect?
Phil, I consider currency markets to be the hardest markets in existence to predict. Virtually everything affects them. I can say this. If these policies do take place as we expect, it will significantly and durably increase the demand for lots of things whose prices are denominated in euros. Will that have a positive impact on the value of that currency? It is one factor, and a big one at that, but it is just one factor among countless others.
Daniel, final question. As global trade and defense divisions grow, confluence sees the world breaking into economic blocks. We've talked about this a lot, with higher inflation worldwide a good possibility. And one likely scenario is the emergence of three blocks, one led by the United States, one by China, and one possibly by Russia. Is a German-led European bloc a legitimate possibility, maybe even at the expense of Russia?
Phil, that's a great question and a really good one to end our discussion. People often think of global fracturing and bloc formation in terms of two competing blocs driven by two superpowers, and I think that's because the last time we had a fractured world, the Cold War, that's how it was. However, there have been other times in world history during which we had several competing powers with more than two blocs. That certainly could happen again. Let's take it back to the beginning of our discussion and your first question. Germany has the third largest economy in the world, and that is after a five-year period of stagnation. And now its government is getting very serious about rejuvenating itself, not just economically, but militarily and geopolitically. It is well within the bounds of historical precedent and present possibilities for Germany to emerge in the future as the leader of a bloc.
Thank you, Daniel. This week's report is titled Introducing Friedrich Merz, Chancellor of Germany. And you can find a link to the written report on the Confluence Investment Management webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. Today's discussion is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. And this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.